Hey everyone, welcome back to Stingers and Dingers. Before we get into the episode, did want to highlight who the guest is today. It is Mike Carroll of Fit for Golf. Some of you have probably heard his voice from some other podcasts on the internet, including Chasing Scratch. Today we talk a little bit about fitness for golf just in general, but then we also get into what you can do while we're stuck at home during this coronavirus pandemic. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode. If you do want any specific workout stuff from the things we talk about, he does have a blog for Fit for Golf home workouts that I'm going to be putting in the show notes, so check it out. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the episode. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Stingers and Dingers. We got a special episode for you this week with Mike Carroll of Fit for Golf. How you doing, Mike?
I'm very good. Thank you, Trey. Thanks for asking me to come on.
Yeah, of course. Glad to have you. For those of you who don't know, Mike is a TPI professional. Are you level three, I believe?
I am, yeah. TPI certified level three golf fitness professional and have some other kind of education and accreditations in my background as well.
Great. Yeah. And I wanted to have him on today to talk a little bit to us about at-home workouts, particularly for golf, since a lot of us are stuck in home as the shelter in place is in place for a lot of states in the United States and around the world as well. So, just to start off, you talked a little bit about your background in terms of your level three TPI. Can you talk a little bit about what that means and how you got that accreditation?
Yeah. I suppose most importantly, kind of education-wise, I did an exercise science degree in the University of Limerick. I grew up in Ireland. I only moved to the US 3 years ago. And when I finished college, I knew that I wanted to go into the kind of pathway would be called strength and conditioning. Mm-hmm. The best way to explain strength and conditioning to people is that a strength and conditioning coach is essentially a personal trainer, but rather than kind of helping people either gain muscle or lose fat, which is usually the goal with a personal trainer, it's generally to improve sporting performance in a particular sport. So your clients are generally athletes as opposed to general population. You do work with general population too, but most of the time there's a kind of sports performance emphasis there too. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. Really interested in a lot of other sports, but played golf growing up and just really enjoyed it and knew it would be a little bit of a niche too. So in 2014, after I finished college, I started the TPI certification route. They have three levels. So level one, whether you're a golf instructor, golf fitness professional, you're a trainer, whether you're a physical therapist, a doctor, a chiropractor, everybody does the same level one with TPI. So they get everybody the same kind of basic foundation of what they call the body swing connection. So how those two things link up. And then if you want to go to level two or level three, you separate into your own pathway. So as a strength and conditioning coach, I did golf fitness level two and level three. A physical therapist would do generally golf medical level two or three. And a golf instructor would go and do golf level two or three. So you branch off into your relevant area of expertise and dig a little bit deeper.
Got it. And that's good context to know, because I think in terms of, branching out, there are a lot of people who have had the word, the TPI certification before. And it's good to know that, like, hey, it branches off into golf instruction versus physical therapy and even strength and conditioning. In terms of the education that they have around strength and conditioning, is it around biomechanics of the swing as well as the body, or can you talk a little bit about like what that education's like?
Yeah, it was really, really interesting going into it. So the level one, it gets updated regularly. When I did it, the level one was a 2-day course, and what they focus on are basically two things they have in their body swing connection. So they have their TPI movement screen, which is where they bring you through a series of 16 exercises and teach you how to use those exercises to assess somebody's, essentially assessing somebody's mobility and how their body moves in relation to what you want to be able to do in the golf swing. So looking at things like hip mobility, shoulder mobility, if your wrists can flex and extend, and also how well, not just mobility, but also some coordination. So do you actually have the control of your body to just turn your hips when you're trying to turn your hips? I.e., can you create some separation? Can you just turn your shoulders when you're trying to turn your shoulders, or do your hips get dragged with it? So a combination of mobility and the kind of fancy word would be motor control, which basically means coordination. And then they had another side to it, which was more the golf instruction side, which was they have their Big 12 movement tendencies, which are swing characteristics. They call them swing characteristics rather than swing faults, because there's been lots of extremely good players have displayed some of them. But if they're done in excess, they can lead to issues, either with kind of lack of power production, potentially injury risk, or just makes it harder to be good at hitting a golf ball. And their kind of goal there is that they want to get the, say, people who don't have a physical training background up to speed with the physical side of it, so the body side of it. And they want to get the trainers up to speed with the basics of the golf swing. They just want everybody to leave that first weekend with an understanding of, okay, these are the main kind of mobility or coordination things that we want to be able to assess people for in the golf swing. And also, if you're looking at a golf swing, this is how you'd assess it from kind of a gross or basic movement standpoint, in terms of what way the person is in their posture, what way they move in a kind of body sense, not looking too much at, say, shaft or face or things like that, but more so sway, slide, early extension, that sort of thing.
Got it. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's really interesting, right? Because I think in terms of, you know, when people think about a swing, right, they might have a tendency to either, you know, their hips can't clear, or they're coming over the top, or they don't have some mobility that wouldn't cause them to you know, have you know, some good basics. And some people don't realize that it's not just a swing thing; it's actually a, you know, a body mechanics, or particularly a default that they're going back to because they don't have the mobility or the strength to get into those movement patterns.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. And that kind of, I guess, gets me into my next question is the general population, right? You know, 99.9% of golfers, you know, shoot, I think it's 75 or above. And a lot of those people I see have particular, you know, movement tendencies that will cause, you know, either a slice or, you know, a limited backswing in terms of how far they can go back. From what you see working with people that are, you know, what you could say the weekend warriors, what do you typically see in terms of issues, you know, people have with mobility or strength or otherwise?
Yeah, so like I've done a lot of screenings at this point, like definitely multiple hundreds of assessments, and all the time what you see, the differences between say higher handicap players and really low handicap players or professionals, probably the biggest one that I see is hip and pelvis mobility and control. And you tend to see that showing up in people's swings too. Like, I'm by no means a swing expert, but when you assess a pro versus a, say, 16 middle-aged handicap or 16 handicapper that's middle-aged, nearly all the time, the pro has much, much more hip mobility and much better control of how they're moving their pelvis. And when you look at them swing, the big difference oftentimes between lower and higher handicap players too is how well the good players can use their lower body and how much better their sequence is in terms of the lower body leading and the upper body kind of lagging behind a little bit. So that's definitely the big thing that I would see is hip mobility. But to be honest, even though you can go real in-depth with the screenings, nearly all the time when you're dealing with your regular weekend warrior, say desk job or driving job, 50 to 65 years old, they've been doing that for a couple of decades. Usually they need mobility of the basic joints, things like ankles, knees, hips, shoulders. They need to work on total body strength with some basic movements, things like squatting, hinging, pushing, pulling. And they need to work on some power production. So things like vertical jumps, medicine ball throws, explosive cable pulley rotations. And with a staple of those, you can't really go too far wrong. Like, sometimes people get a little bit too obsessed with getting something that's customized for them. But in my experience, like, we're all humans trying to play the same sport that requires a pretty unique but consistent movement. So 95% of the things that people need to work on are the same. Like, you don't need to get ultra customized to work on something to get benefits, basically, is what I'm taking a long way to say there.
Sure. And that makes sense, because it you know, we all have the same joints and everything and how our body typically works. So, you know, the 95% of things that would make everyone better, you know, you should do before you even chase after that 5% of, you know, what even the pros are chasing of, right, where they're trying to take it to that next
level. Exactly. And kind of something that I should have mentioned there is that while you're going to be working on the same things, the level that you need to get to them for, if you're a player who's just finished college and is trying to have 118 mile per hour swing speed and make it on the PGA Tour, is going to have to get to a different level of those same things you're working on compared to a 60-year-old who is a 12 handicapper and has 89 mile per hour swing speed and wants to get to 95. So the general things they'll be working on may be the same, but obviously they'll have to get to different levels of those to get to where they want in terms of their outcome.
That makes sense. And in terms of, you know, taking someone from, you know, where they are, typical desk job, really haven't been that active, to, you know, seeing some general improvements either in their golf swing or, you know, driver head speed, what's the typical length of time that you see someone's, you know, see improvements in that?
To be honest, often extremely quickly. Like, even really simple things, like if you can get somebody who is not doing any comprehensive warm-up to do one before they hit balls or before they play, that's often like an enlightening moment for people. When you go through a decent warm-up for the first time before hitting balls, something that warms up and mobilizes your hips, your spine, your shoulders, your neck, and you get the blood flowing and get the joints mobilized a little bit, people are often amazed at how much better they just feel at being able to swing a bit more freely, and oftentimes a reduction in aches and pains that they may have in things like their lower back or knee or shoulder or elbow or something like that. So it can often literally be instant if somebody starts to work on something like that. But to be honest, within the space of a couple of weeks, if somebody's working on mobility, strength, and power, they usually start to see improvements. Like, I've had a lot of people go through a 12-week training program that I offer, and very, very common is about 5 miles per hour in 12 weeks, which is worth about 10 to 15 yards, depending. You get roughly 2.5 miles per hour per mile per hour. Sorry, you get roughly 2.5 yards per mile of clubhead speed. So that's the ballpark there. And that would be reasonably common. And with that, it's not just the speed. People often feel a lot better too. They're not sore after they play, or they don't feel like it takes, you know, 4 or 5 holes to warm up.
Sure. No, that makes sense. And I think something that I recall, you know, I'm a big Chasing Scratch fan of that podcast, and hearing them talk about your program, and even in the first couple of weeks, them gaining speed. Obviously, I think if they'd stuck with it, they would have had better results. But
yeah,
only so much you can do with a 12-week program. But even just hearing them talk about it, it sounds like they are seeing results pretty much within that 4-week period.
Yeah, definitely. Because what most people, like, they're coming from a state where they haven't really been doing anything. So if you take someone and their only, say, activity is, you know, maybe going for an occasional walk, or maybe doing the occasional bit of cardio or something like that, and obviously hitting golf balls, they're coming from a very low baseline. So as soon as you start kind of feeding them some proper training, the adaptations are very, very quickly. We all know from things we've kind of all started ourselves that mm-hmm. when you first begin doing something, the improvements usually come quite rapidly. Like, you've, for example, a simple analogy would be, we've all seen the, like, couch to 5K or the couch to 3 mile programs. If you haven't been running for a long time and you start, first couple of ones, you feel terrible. Gradually, it gets a little, like, you adapt to it pretty quickly. It's the same with doing some kind of strength training or mobility training. That's a bit more specific to golf too. Once you start, the gains come quickly. Then after a while, it starts to level off a little bit, or we'd all, you know, get to super high levels if the improvement never kind of plateaued.
Sure. No, that totally makes sense. And that actually kind of gives us a good transition to this time that we're in right now, right? Where everyone's, you know, stuck at home because of COVID, not a whole lot to do. But I think in terms of the opportunity to at least maintain their golf game, if not improve their golf game via some sort of physical activity, you know, I think is something that people would be really interested in, especially because right now, right? We have to look forward to in 3 months when we come out, and you know, hopefully after, you know, someone works with one of your programs, you know, over the next 12 weeks and we come out, they can see that driver club head speed, you know, that they've increased or anything like that, or frankly, even just feel better than they do now. In terms of, you know, being in a full gym versus working from working out from home, what in your mind are some of the staples that you can do at home with, you know, let's say, let's start off with like no equipment, right? Like what can you do at home with no equipment? And then on top of that, you know, a secondary question, what type of equipment would you recommend someone to buy?
Yeah. So the first thing that I'd say there to people is like, there's an awful lot you can achieve with just your body weight and zero external equipment, but you need to have a pretty good guide for what to do though. If you give someone who has kind of no experience in training or, you know, isn't an expert, essentially pretty quickly, they're going to get limited with, okay, what do I do next? Or what do I do now? But you can do a whole range of mobility exercises, which are really, really beneficial with just body weight. You don't need any equipment. Things like working on hip rotation, spine flexibility, shoulder turn, shoulder mobility, those things don't require any equipment. You can also work on power really effectively without any equipment. So a simple way to do that for the lower body would be practicing things like vertical jumps. So there's a really strong correlation between how much force we can push into the ground when we're swinging and our club head speed. And one of the best, and that's related to lower body power. And one of the best ways we can train how to push force into the ground is with things like jumping. You can do that with zero equipment at home. So doing something like a set of 3 to 5 jumps as explosively as you can, rest for a minute or so your heart rate comes back down, repeat that 3 or 4 times, something like 12 or 15 total jumps split into 3 or 4 sets. Doing that a couple of times a week will definitely help your lower body power. And then depending on the conditioning level that you're at, even things like squatting, lunging, planking, push-ups, if you can get a pull-up bar, like a door frame mounted pull-up bar or something like a TRX you can hook into a door, then I know that's getting into a little bit of equipment, but they're things that don't require much and you can definitely do them. And then simply adding things like either like a kettlebell and dumbbell are pretty interchangeable. They just have slightly different handles. They do the same thing. But you can add those to things like your lunging, your squatting, your hinging, like a deadlift movement. You can do some rotations with them. And then you can get your upper body exercises too, like pushing, overhead, pulling, like a row type movement, and things like chest pressing. So they're all reasonably easy to do. And bands, you can basically do the same thing with bands. You just set them up slightly differently, but the same exercises are essentially the ones you want to be concentrating on. Like, I don't know how well versed in kind of working out a lot of your listeners are, but real quickly, if you can break your training movements up into, so if we take the lower body, your two main movements are going to be squatting and hinging. So hinging would be different to a squat, that it doesn't really have much knee bend, and it's more pushing your butt back and allowing your torso start to incline forward, almost like an exaggerated golf posture nearly. They'd usually be termed like Romanian deadlifts or RDLs or deadlifts. Sure. In a gym setting. And then with the upper body, so they're the two main lower body ones, squatting and hinging. They can be done on one leg or two legs. So you already have 4 exercises there. The main difference when you go from 2 legs to 1 leg is you get to check your left versus right, and you also get to work on your balance and stability a little bit. Mm-hmm. But because your balance and stability is challenged, they're not quite as good for producing power, because you're wasting power trying to maintain your stability. But they're both good, just different things. Then with the upper body, if we break it into pushing, so where you're pushing away from you and pulling towards you, so most people would associate that with something like a bench press or push-up. And then something like a row, where you're pulling towards you, would be the opposite. And then we can also do those two movements in a vertical fashion or overhead, like a shoulder press or a pull-up or a lat pull-down. And what they're the main things that I get people to concentrate on. You could do a little bit of planking and rotating too. And with those, that's like 9 kind of movement patterns or exercises. And you, if you learn then how to load those with either just your body weight, that will be a little bit limiting for people who are of a high fitness level. But then if you start adding something like a dumbbell or a kettlebell or some bands, pretty quickly you've got the basis for a really good workout there, considering you could have done some mobility work beforehand with just your body weight and maybe some power work with things like the vertical jumping.
Yeah, no, I think that's all really good advice. And, you know, something that I've always, so also besides the fact that I was an elite level golfer, I also, you know, have a strength background. So I powerlifted for a long time. So I, you know, So a lot of barbell movements there. And something that, you know, I've always heard in terms of, you know, the idea of strength training getting better, you know, one thing being periodization. So the way that you actually improve and increase the weight over time or increase the workload over time. But also for golf, do you recommend that instead of doing like a split where you do an upper lower, do you recommend doing kind of a full body, you know, 3 days a week? What's your recommendation around that?
Yeah. So like what I've had by far the best success with people doing is that first of all, a body part split routine for a golfer makes no sense unless the person is in the gym at least 5 times a week. And even at that, it's still nowhere near the best way to train. Like you can get improvement. And this is where it goes back to almost my first point in terms of the difference between, say, personal training and strength and conditioning. If your sole focus is to kind of get lean and look better, basically, body part split routine will work fine. But if you have also a goal of improving your sports performance, there's way better things than you can be doing than the kind of split routine. And that starts to go into what I was talking about a little second ago, trying to enhance how strong you are and how powerful you are in kind of more complex movement patterns, as opposed to just trying to grow a muscle by constantly overloading it, regardless of what the exercise is or what the movement is. So what I really like for golfers is 3 days a week. And in each session, they're doing a little bit of lower body, a little bit of trunk or core, and a little bit of upper body. But you'd be doing way less for each body part in each session compared to if you were only doing something like legs once a week, chest once a week, shoulders once a week, and absolutely trashing that body part. Instead, you'd be splitting it up. And for example, how it might look is you might do, so in terms of what a workout would look like, generally there'd be about 10 to 15 minutes at the start for some mobility work, and that would also count as your warm up. Then I'd get people to do some power work second once they're warmed up, because you want to do your power work when you're fresh. So something like jumping, and if you can, medicine ball throwing, which is really good for core and upper body power. If you can't throw medicine balls, you can do kind of explosive cable pulley rotations. They can be done with a band if you don't have a cable machine. And then you'd move into your strength work. And usually I get people to do 4 strength exercises in a workout. They do 2 upper body and 2 lower body. So for example, you might do a squat, a horizontal push, a hinge, and then something like a vertical pull. And then the next day you do the ones that you didn't get in from those kind of 9 movements I outlined a second ago. So one day might be, say, squats, bench press, single leg hip hinges, and a pull-up. And then on the next day, you might do, for your strength section, you might do deadlifts, overhead press, single leg squats, and something like rows. Mm-hmm. And that way, each time you go to the gym, you're kind of topping up each body part, but you're not completely trashing it each time. What most people don't really realize is that strength and power responds extremely well to frequency. So doing little and often is usually much better for improvement than absolutely trashing something once a week. And even in terms of muscle size, if that's what you're going for, like what you're kind of trying to keep topped up is something called muscle protein synthesis. And without getting too technical, muscle protein synthesis will only stay elevated maximally for about 36 hours, regardless of how much work you do on a body part. So you fall into a kind of problem then when, if you know that you're only kind of going to be still adapting to your workout for about 36 or maybe 48 hours, but you've done so much work that you're sore and fatigued for 4 days or 5 days, you're just missing out on training time then. And what I often say to people is, if you say do a leg session, and the lower body is unbelievably important for power in the golf swing, if you do one extremely hard leg session per week, at the end of a year, you're going to have 50 leg sessions done. Whereas if you did 3 leg sessions per week with slightly less in each session, you're going to have 150 leg sessions done in a year. And I'm pretty certain that the person who has 150 of the less, say, volume done in each session will be better at the end of the year. And that works with all the other kind of body parts or movements too.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And, you know, I think even the recovery, even to play golf, right? Like you can, you know, when you destroy your body and you decide to do legs on, you know, Saturday and try to go play golf on Sunday, sometimes nothing works. And so
yeah,
the ability to even play after the workout is something
exactly
that people are thinking.
Yeah. Exactly. What's really important for people to take note of too, when you're training for enhancing sport performance, is there's actually no real need to get super fatigued and to get super sore. Like soreness is a really, really poor indicator of the benefit or success of a workout. How you get sore is from doing stuff that's new and you're unaccustomed to, or doing way more of something than you're used to. So if you're doing exercises where you're relatively used to them, so you've had some experience with them, you don't go crazy on overloading how much you're doing too frequently. And there's also no need to do reps where you're really, really grinding out and, you know, doing forced reps and stuff like that, because what you're really trying to do with your strength training for golf is have a transfer to how much power and speed you can produce. So you can actually get really big benefits from not using crazy heavy weights, but concentrating on moving them as quickly as possible. That's actually the real key for improving power production with your strength training, is getting the barbell from, or the dumbbell or the kettlebell or the cable or whatever you're using, from point A to point B as quickly as possible. So on the upward phase of a squat, trying to drive your feet through the floor and your head through the ceiling, or on a bench press, imagining that you're throwing the bar through the ceiling on the way up. Now, obviously you won't actually be moving that quickly because the load is slowing you down, but the intent to do it is really important. Almost like you're pushing a car, giving someone a start. You're trying to push the car as fast and as hard as you can, but it's moving slowly because it's heavy.
Sure. Making sure that you're giving maximal effort.
Exactly. Yeah.
That makes sense. And then, so we talked a little bit about just, you know, strength in terms of, you know, different exercises you can do at home. And in terms of conditioning, I guess one is like, what type of conditioning do you recommend? And then also on top of that is how do you stagger that in with your weight workout or your golf workouts?
Yeah, like the first thing that I would say to people is, depending on how much workout time you have, cardio isn't that important for golf, in that golf is basically broken down into two different segments. You have the golf swing, which is a really high power explosive activity that takes 1 second. And then you have 4 or 5 minutes walking between shots, and you're also standing around. So very rarely in golf is the ability to take in and use oxygen, which is what cardio training is doing, the limiting factor for your golf performance. People often get confused that because golf is 4 or 5 hours long and they get tired towards the end of it, that it's their cardio is the problem. But it's not like you're struggling on the 16th hole to take in and use oxygen compared to what you were on the 4th hole. It's a different type of fatigue. So it's usually a little bit more muscular endurance. And also, it usually comes down to people are just starting to get a little bit hungry and blood sugar is dropping off. So the first thing I would say that is, if you walk, if you're, first of all, is the cardio for golf or fatigue in golf, getting your weight under control would probably be the first thing. And then the second thing would be regular walking. So try and walk the course more frequently. Get out and walk if you can a few days a week. And what's nice about that is you can use your kind of specified training time then to really work on your mobility, your power, and your strength, which will have way more of an impact on your golf game, i.e. actually enhancing your swing, as opposed to cardio. So I always try and tell people that before worrying about getting your cardio work in, make sure you're getting definitely 3 training sessions per week where you're mixing up doing some mobility, some power, and some strength. So oftentimes a simple way of explaining it is, if you have 3 45-minute workouts per week, you want to have about 15 minutes mobility, about 10 to 15 minutes of power, which would be like the jumping and throwing stuff, and then about 15 to 20 minutes of strength work. The strength work takes a little bit longer because the recovery periods between sets and between exercises needs to be slightly longer, but roughly 15, 15, 15, 15 mobility, 15 power, 15 strength. The other thing that people forget is that strength training or resistance training is essentially a form of interval training, because when you're doing your set, that's your kind of high intensity bout where you're really pushing as hard as you can, and then you're taking a rest. So you don't get quite the same cardiovascular effect that you would get from cardio training or interval training that people would usually do, in like high intensity interval training, but it still has a really, really powerful effect on your heart and lungs. And a way that I often get people to structure their strength training so that they can get more work in less time, and also get a little bit better cardio benefit without kind of turning it into a CrossFit or cardio workout, is supersetting or pairing up a lower body exercise and an upper body exercise. This can be tough to do if the gym is very busy, but if it's quiet or if you work out at home, it's really easy to do. And an example for that would be doing, say, a set of squats, picking a weight that makes 6 reps reasonably tough, pushing as hard as you can for the 6 reps on your squats, take a little bit of a break, and then rather than going back to squats, do a set of, say, bench presses or pull-ups. And what's happening then is that your legs, which have just been heavily fatigued from the squats, are getting a little bit of a break, and you work your upper body in the bench press or pull-up. And that way, when you're finished the bench press or pull-ups, you can go back to the squats again. Your legs have fatigued, but your heart and lungs have been kind of forced to keep going all the time. And that definitely cuts down how long your training sessions take, or you can get more work done in the same amount of time. And it also hits the cardio pretty hard because the heart and lungs haven't had that much time off.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good insight in terms of just getting more work done in less time, especially as a lot of people have kids or jobs, you know.
Definitely. Without kind of diluting the actual strength work that you're getting, though, it's not a case of trying to turn a strength workout into a cardio workout and race through it, but it definitely makes a difference in terms of, like, if you go from, say, squats to bench presses, you can definitely get, say, your 4 sets of each in much faster than if you were just doing squats, resting until you feel okay to do squats again. Like the doing the set of bench presses in between doesn't really delay how much recovery time it takes to be able to go back to squats by that long.
Sure. And that makes sense. And if you are feeling that fatigue, then you're probably doing too much work in each set, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like you want to keep, when you're training for strength or power, this is something where people go really, really wrong a lot of the time, is you actually don't want to be going to too high a level of fatigue. Because what happens then is the power output on each rep starts to get really, really low. And we actually want the power output on each rep to be really, really high, because that's what's going to enhance how powerful we can be. It's almost like if you're training someone for a 40-yard dash, you're not going to get them to do multiple 40-yard dashes with 30 seconds rest in between, because after the first one, they're no longer training their sprinting speed, they're training their endurance. And if we take that same analogy and put it into, say, weight room work, whether we're doing kind of power stuff with jumping and throwing or strength stuff with some barbells or dumbbells or cables, you want to keep the reps pretty low. So usually somewhere between about 3 and 8 reps per set, roughly, depending on how advanced you are. The more advanced you are, the lower the rep should be. Be able to produce lots of power on each rep. There shouldn't be much of a slowdown in the bar speed. And then you want to stop and rest long enough so that when you come back for your next set, that power is fully recovered. Oftentimes what people do is they do reps that are too high, the force output or the power produced on each rep is too low, and they're really kind of training muscular endurance rather than speed or power.
Sure.
Kind of getting gassed and being out of breath or feeling the burn is really kind of the enemy of enhancing power and speed. Mm-hmm. They're completely contradictory training processes.
Totally. And is there a particular rep range that you see that is, you know, if you go over this, you're probably training more muscular endurance?
I generally keep things below 8, about 8 reps most of the time. What that corresponds to roughly, without getting too complicated, that's about 80% of what would be termed a 1 rep max, which would be the most weight that you could lift in a particular exercise. There's no need for the kind of everyday golfer or everyday trainee to go and test their maxes. You'll be able to tell if you're getting stronger just by your regular training sessions. But for most people, if they kept a lot of their reps between, say, about 3 and 6, I bet they'd feel like they're not doing that much work. They'd be used to probably doing, like, I bet most people listening are more used to doing something like 3 by 10 or 3 by 12 or 3 by 15. But what's happening there really, like, is once you've done a set of 3 by 12, you're going to have built up enough fatigue where your power output's going to be really, really poor for the rest of the workout, basically. So what I'd much rather people to do when they're training strength and power is reduce your reps per set. So instead of doing 12, do something like 5. Obviously, that will allow you to increase the weight a little bit, which is going to help you produce more force. But then you can do more sets if you want to get in more of a training effect. So you could do something like 5, take a break, 5, take a break, 3, take a break, 3, take a break, something like that. But each time trying to focus on a really, really powerful rep.
Got it. Yeah, I think that's good input, because, you know, I think when people hear about the, you know, the typical 3 sets of 10, they're probably going after, you know, probably one of the old Arnold Schwarzenegger pumping iron movies, right?
And, yeah, exactly. And that's where that often kind of comes back to bite people, is as they get a slightly more advanced in their training. Like we were saying earlier, if you take somebody off the couch that has no strength training or gym experience, if you put them on any type of training program, whether it's a body part split, basically anything, their strength will improve, their power will improve, and their clubhead speed will go up. But then as we get better and better trained, we need to do training that's more and more specific to what we're trying to improve. And that's when those training programs that are further and further away from optimal, or that actually match the demands of what we're trying to improve, will start to lead to less and less gains.
Got it. Yeah, that totally makes sense, especially in an untrained population, right, compared to some of the more elite athletes that we see.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, I definitely appreciate you hopping in and giving us all of these insights. If someone were to reach out to you and contact you or look for some of your programs, where would they find you?
So all of my programs are available on fitforgolf.blog. Basically, the training programs come through an app, but the app's not in the app store. You purchase it through the website, and there's a whole bunch of different options. Lately, I've been putting a lot of time into developing the home workouts, because that's where everybody is kind of confined to. And if anybody has any questions, they can email me at fitforgolf, F-O-R, the digits 18, at gmail.com. So fitforgolf18 at gmail.com. And on social media, I'm definitely most active on Twitter. That is fit_4_golf.
Great. Well, thanks so much for your time, Mike, and we'll let you go. Thanks again.
Yeah, no problem, Trey. You're more than welcome. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Of course, anytime.
Yep, thank you.